All right, I will say good morning, good morning. Let us begin by thanking our sponsors for this morning's shiur, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Tammuz. Rav Naftali Tilson, thank you, Ari, thank you so much. Rav Naftali Tilson from Eretz Yisrael for dedicating over Shurman Joshua's this month in commemoration of the yard site of his beloved parents, Rabbi Yonah ben Avram Leib and Rivka bas Yaakov. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Shamash Tavin Aliyah, and the family in Nechama. We thank our week of learning sponsors, Jacob and Julie Blumenfeld, for dedicating the Shiurim this week, Le'ili Nishmas, Jacob's grandmother, Hena Bas Mordechai. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama Tavin Aliyah, and the family in Nechama. And we dedicate our learning. We know that in the IDF operation in Jenin, there was one soldier who was killed, David Yehuda Yitzchak. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his precious and beautiful Nesham will have an aliyah. His family will know no more tzar. And Amir Hashem, all of the precious Neshamas of the IDF, should Amir Hashem be zocha to successfully fulfill their mission and come home to their families safely. We'll say with that, let us begin. We have a lot to do today, a really incredible daf. Actually, very exciting. There's actually even going to be some stories today. I know it's been a little while since we've had some stories. Not a gadata per se, but about a couple of stories. Today's daf is, thank you, today's daf is Nun Beis 52. We are picking up, we have to quickly finish up the last sugya. We're picking up on Nun Aleph on the Beis 51b, 10 lines up from the bottom. We had a machlokis, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, in reality, that machlokis is anchored in the position of Rabba. What did Rabba say? The Amar Rabba, Mipnei Ma Amra Torah, Moda B'miksas Hatayna Yishava. Now we'll say, why is it that we have a concept that a partial admission generates an oath? Remember again, paradigmatic example of this, right? Reuven goes over to Shimon. Reuven says, Shimon, you owe me $1,000. Shimon says, not true, I only owe you $500. What's the halacha? He obviously pays the $500 that he admitted to, and he has to take a shvua, an oath, on the remaining $500. What's the logic of that oath? So the Gemara says, Chazaka in other meis panav et mei b'acholo. This Chazaka in general will say that a person is not going to lie directly to the face of his creditor. So in reality, so remember again, Reuben goes over to Shimon and says, Shimon, you owe me $5,000. Shimon says, so Shimon ideally would like to deny the entire loan. Now, so we're going to see, the reason Shimon wants to deny the entire loan is not because he doesn't want to pay back. He doesn't want to pay back now. He doesn't have the money now. Right? See, his thought is, you know, we'll say, so often in life, instead of directly confronting and talking out issues, what we do is we create workarounds without recognizing that our workarounds actually just create so much more work. That's what they do. So really, in reality, Shimon is willing to repay. He just doesn't want to repay now. So what's his svar? As far as, let me just say, I don't owe. The problem is, a debtor, is not going to totally deny the loan to his creditor, because that would be a chutzpah. In reality, Shimon wants to admit the entire debt. This is so interesting. You just said Shimon wants to deny the whole debt. And then we said that Shimon wants to admit the whole debt. So which one is it? The answer is yes. Right? Shimon wants to pay. We'll say, why? Because people want to do the right thing. But right now, Shimon is unable to pay. So what does he figure? He figured, let me just deny it, buy myself some time, and when I have more money, I'll be able to pay. So in other words, v'haydilo odilei, so why doesn't he just admit the entire amount? Ishtamuti hu de kumishtamet, like he's buying himself some time, savar adahavali zuzi uparanale. Ultimately, again, when I have the money, then I'll admit the debt. So Rebbe will say, that's the svara of motive that makes us. In reality, when Shimon admits half the debt, Rebbe will say, now, is it possible that Shimon really only owes Reuven $500? Is that possible? Sure. But it's also apparently equally, if not more possible, that he owes him the full $1,000, and the only reason he's only admitting to $500 is to buy himself some time. So what does the Torah do? Va'amar Rachmona, Rami Shvua Iluye, Ki Hecha Delu Dele Bekulis. What does the Torah say? The Torah says, so you know what? Impose upon him a Shvua. Once I will say so again, so ultimately again, a shvua allows the person, or a shvua creates a mechanism through which, if Shimon does owe the entire amount, he will be obligated to go ahead and admit that. So I will say that is the svara of moda b'miksas. So what's the shaila, which we've seen before many times? So what's the shaila? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov svar lo shna bo v'lo shna b'mnas. So remember again, the case that came up was a case of where Reuven says to Shimon, Shimon, you know, your father lent me $1,000. $1,000. I paid him back $500. Here's the remaining $500. So I will say, so the Shaila was, is that a Moda B'miktas case or not? Should Reuven then have to take a Shavua on the remaining $500 or not? Or on the supposed repaid $500 or not? So what happens? So Reuven ben Yaakov, Sarah Loshna Bo, Loshna Bibno, Enomeis, Behilchach, Lav Meshiv Abedahu. So Reuven ben Yaakov says there's really no difference in a Moda B'miktas case. Ultimately, again, whether the borrower is talking to the actual lender or to the son of the lender, right? But rather, again, I will say we look at this as a typical Moda B'miktas case, and therefore, halacha l'maisa, Reuven is going to have to swear about the 500 that he supposedly paid back. For Rabbanan Savri, Rabbanan, on the other hand, hold, Bohu de'enal meis. No. It's only that a borrower would not be so brazen to deny the loan into the face of his lender. Ava bibno, but with the son of the lender, Rebbe will say, now what's the chap with the son of the lender? Meis, he would deny the loan. Why would he deny the loan? Why? Because Rebbe will say, the son of the lender, Bepashtos, has no first-hand knowledge of his father's debt. So because of that, I will say, in general, it's actually interesting. What the Gemara explains is, there's even chutzpahdik people, there's a cap to the amount of chutzpah you're going to have. A cap. Even though we all know that guy who has no cap to his chutzpah, right? But lamaisa, generally, people, so the idea over here is a person is not going to lie directly into the face of the person who lent him money and said, I don't owe you anything. The most he'll do is he'll deny half. And this way, again, if he denies, and what's the svara? The svara is, I'm going to pay the rest. But when? Later on, when I have the money. So I will say, see here, interestingly enough, so the Chachamim say, that ultimately this idea that a borrower wouldn't lie is only a din directly to the lender, but not a din to the son of the lender. And therefore, I will say, listen to this. The Chachamim hold that in a case where Reuven goes ahead and says, I borrowed $500, I borrowed $1,000 from your father. I already paid him back $500. Here's the remaining $500. The truth is, Reuven would feel just as empowered to fully lie to the son of the borrower. The fact that he admits that he owed the debt, number one, that he repaid part of it and that he still owes money, that's the Rabbanan say, kimeshiv aveda, like returning a lost object. Rabbanan say, what's the halacha when you return a lost object? What did we say in the Mishnah? What's the halacha? No shavua. So I said, that's the end of the sugya. So how do we paskin? So first of all, I said, let me work back. So let me tell you the ikra halacha. So the Rambam paskins, the Rambam says, this is in Hilchos Gzela, Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Tes, Hamotzi Mitzia Lo Yeshava. So I said, this is the halacha. This is how we paskin. You find the lost object, you take it back to the owner. The owner says, that's great, but there was more. Whatever the more is, you return a bag of money, there were two bags of money, you return one ox, there were two oxen, you return $100 in the wallet, there was $200 in the wallet. So we'll say, what's the halacha? The returner of the lost object is never obligated to take a shavua. Why? Mipnei tikun olam, benefit of society. And the Rambam says it explicitly. Shem ata omer yeshava. Because if you make the returner of a lost object take an oath, we'll say, what's going to happen? Yaniach hametzia v'yelech. Guy's going to say, forget this. I'm happy to do the right thing. But at the end of the day, not if it's complicated. So we'll say, that is how we pass the halacha l'maisa. So if you, and this is, by the way, this kind of case is actually very shaykh. This does happen. Where a person returns a lost object, you get back your lost object, like, oh, thank you. And they're like, oh, what's the O? You know, there was $500 in the wallet. Now there's only $100. Now what happened? I don't know what happened. But lemaisa, no shavua obligation in that situation. Mipnei tikun olam. Rabbi say that's number one. Number two, the Rambam paskins that halacha lemaisa in the case where we're dealing with the father, or I should say the son, which is the case that we just saw before. Top of the Nile from the days. Reuven goes over to Shimon. Reuven says, Shimon, your father lent me $1,000. I paid back $500. Here's the remaining $500. Or even the reverse case. Shimon goes over to Reuven and says, Reuven, my father lent you $1,000. What happened? And Reuven says, I paid him back $500. Here's the remaining $500. The Rambam paskins, that is not a Moda B'miktas case, but rather that's a Meshiv Aveda case. Right? Why? What's the logic? It's only Moda B'miktas when we say that the borrower would not lie to the creditor. When do we say that the borrower wouldn't lie to the creditor? when it's the creditor himself. When it's the son of the creditor, he absolutely would lie. The fact that Reuven's admitting to any level of this debt or of coming of his own volition makes it like the returning of a lost object, and therefore halacha l'maisa, there is no shvua in that case as well. Incredible. Good. Let's say I'll just mention something interesting. Just something interesting that if you think about Motu Mixas, it's also powerful, like on a hashkafic level. Right? So we'll say, so what's the whole din of Motu Mixas? A person in life is confronted with liability. Right? We all have liability. There are things I've done wrong and things I have to fix. So we'll say, what happens when the person is confronted with liability? So my first reaction is, let's say in general, what's the first reaction of people when confronted with wrongdoing? I didn't do it. Not me. So I will say, that's what I'd like to say, right? When confronted with my personalistic spiritual liability, I'd like to say, not me, but ein adam meis panav bifnei bal chovo. Right? I can't say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I didn't do it. Why? Because the Ribono Shel Olam knows that I did it. So there's really no way for me to get out of that. Okay, so what happens? But still, I have such a strong desire just to pretend like I had no problems. Right? To pretend like there are absolutely no issues. So I say, but I can't do that. I can't do that. Why? Eino Dameh is part of the Fei Bachovo. I'm going to tell the Melech Machayamachim, I'm going to tell the Ribono Shel Olam that there's nothing wrong when he knows that everything is wrong. So I will say, so what do I do? So then my next reaction is, Ubekule boy delude. Fine. I'll just admit everything. Take responsibility for everything. So Rabbi Gemara says, but that I can't do. Why? Vahai delo ude ishtamute hu kudim ishtamit. I will say, then I say to myself, I can't admit everything. So instead, what I'll do is, I'll admit some things, to like give myself a little bit of breathing room to take ownership over the rest of the stuff. I can't admit everything that's broken in life because that's a lot. I have a lot of stuff that's broken. So instead, what am I going to do? I'll be molded by mixas. I'll admit that certain things are broken, certain things are in a state of disrepair, but no way that I could admit everything. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Right? Savar adahavi li zuzi paranalei. Let me get a little bit more time, like quote unquote, a little bit more money, a little bit more credit, a little bit more capital, a little bit more personal capital, and then I'll own up to the rest of the stuff that's broken. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Va'amir Achmana rami alei shivua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposes a shivua. I will say it's interesting. Vashem Deva Kadosh says, what's the shivua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposes upon us? It's the shivua meseches nida. Right? The Gemara says that when a person comes into the world, right, there's a shvua, there's an oath that is administered to him. The shvua is, Tehi tzadik va'al tehi rasha. Be righteous. Be righteous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposes a shvua, and I will say, what's the point of the shvua? The point of the shvua, I will say, is own it. Whatever is broken, own it. We spend so much time and so much energy first trying to deny that there are personal problems. Then, after I can no longer deny that there are personal problems, so instead, what do? Amode b'mikzas. Amode, fine, there's some problems. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, just own it. I'm not even telling you have to fix everything right now. I'm not telling you that you have to go ahead and remedy everything that's wrong. But at least find the personalistic courage to own the things that are broken. Right? Don't spend your life running. Don't spend your life making excuses. Don't spend your life pretending. Don't spend your life being a motive that makes us. If something is broken, whatever is broken, own it. Because the sooner I own it, even if I can't fix it now, in Meretz Hashem, at least I know down the road what needs to be remedied. Incredible. I will say, let's go back to Mishnah. Who knew that Modu Mixas was such an important Hashkafic concept as well? Incredible. I will say, Mishnah, great sugya ahead of us now. Nun Beis Amud Aleph. Yisomim. Shesam Choytza Avayis. So I will say, orphans. Orphans, talking about, again, who are reliant on a Baal HaBayis. I will say this, they're reliant on someone to manage the affairs of their household. Okay. Or their father appointed a custodian. Apotropos, an executor, a custodian. So I'll say this means that the father, during his lifetime, appointed someone to run the estate when he died. Chayiv la'aser perosem. Ultimately, again, this either this is Balabayas who's taking care of the Yisroelim, or the Apotropos is obligated to tithe their produce, to tithe the produce of the Yisroelim. Okay, Apotropos, you know, Avi Yisomim. So we'll say Apotropos, who was appointed by the father of the Yisomim, Yeshava, has to swear. They will say what this means is at a certain point in time, in his apotroposhood, or maybe even at the conclusion of his apotroposhood, he has to go ahead and swear that he has not misappropriated any of the assets of the estate. We know Beis Din lo Yeshava. If he's appointed by Beis Din, then he's not obligated to swear. Abishal Omer Chiluf Hadvarim. Abishal says just the opposite. Just the opposite. If he's obligated, if he's appointed by the father, ultimately again, he doesn't have to swear. If he's appointed by Beis Din, he does have to swear. Fine, we'll see that machlokes in the Gemara. Or Minu. So Gemara, let's talk about the first point. The first point Gemara Mishnah made is that an apotropos or a balabayas who is caring for the affairs of the Yisomim has to tithe their produce. Samar says, Raminhu, ask Akasha Atem. So we'll say the Pasuk when speaking about Truma says, King Tarimu Gam Atem Truma Sashem. What do we learn from Atem? Atem Velo Shutfim. So we'll say, it can only be the person himself, the owner of the produce himself, not a partner. Atem Velo Arisim. The owner, not a sharecropper. Atem Velo Apotropin. You and not a custodian. Atem Velo Atarim Ashenu Shalo. Only you, the owner, and not someone who ties something that's not theirs. So I will say, what do you see from here? What do you see from here? So only the direct owner of the produce has the right to tithe the produce, not an apotropos. This contradicts the Mishnah. Amrav Chista Lo Kashya, Kan Lahachi El Kan Lahaniach. I will say, there's two different types of tithing that could be done. There's tithing in general to eat right now, and then there's tithing for storage, right? Ideally, one should tithe all of their produce and tithe it immediately. When it comes to Yisomim, what we say is like this. Apotropos, whatever the Yisomim are going to eat, tithe that now before we don't want them eating tevel. Right? So tithe their food right now. But if other stuff is being put like into storage, into the silo, don't tithe that now. Don't tithe that now. Only tithe as consumed. As consumed. So therefore the Mishnah that says that the apotropos tithes, that's when the Yisomim are going to eat. The Brisa that says the apotropos does not tithe, that is for food that is going to be stored. Vatanya, we learned, we'll say this supports this idea. Apotropin terminum masu na hachil velolaniach. Apotropos has the ability to tithe for the sake of consumption, but not for storage or not for produce that's going to be stored. Now we'll say now along these same lines, very interesting. Umochin lahen behema avadim ushvachos batim besados ukramim lahachil avolo lahaniach. The apotropos has the right to sell the property of the estate if the Yisomim need the funds for food. So he could sell off, literally again, animals, slaves, maidservants, homes, fields, vineyards, lahachil. If the Yisomim need it for their actual support, but I will say, but not for investment purposes. As well. Lahaniach means to put money into savings. Or even for investment purposes, that he can't do. I will say, in this situation, the custodian is very limited with his ability to transform assets. What essentially, what we really want him to do, I will say, his job is really to keep the estate in a holding pattern until the Yisomim are old enough to take over the affairs of their own. Similarly again, he can sell off fruit, wine, oil, flour, in order to provide food for the Yisomim, but again, not to generate savings. Similarly, again, the apotropos could go ahead and provide for them, whether that's by selling property or by utilizing money in the estate. For lula, varava, sukkah, tzitzis, the chaldavar sheish lo kitzva. For any mitzvah that has a defined shear. Lasu yish shofar, to include shofar, velochin sefer Torah, was a second wide line, velochin sefer Torah, tefillin mezuzos. Also, the apotropos could buy for the yisomim, sefer Torah, tefillin mezuzos, the chaldavar sheish lo kitzva. Any, I will say, this refers to ritual objects, right? Any ritual objects that have a defined amount. La suye megillah, to include a megillah. Okay, so ve'im poskan aleim tzedaka, verb is very interesting. The apotropos cannot make a tzedaka pledge for the yisomim. So he can't give tzedaka from the estate. Ve'im poldin asa shvuyin, he cannot redeem captives. Ve'lo kol davar she'ein lo kitzva. And I will say, he can't engage in anything that doesn't have a ceiling. And I will say, what that means is, what does it mean it doesn't have a ceiling? We already spoke about it. You can't redeem captives for more than their value. What it means is, there's always tzedakah to be given, and there are always captives to be redeemed. So those kind of issues, or those kinds of items, or those kinds of causes, the apotropis cannot involve the estate of the yisom. So what you see over here, Rabbi Yossi, is, so far, the apotropis is permitted to go ahead and sell off assets to feed the yisomim. He's also permitted to spend money on defined mitzvah or ritual obligations. Incredible. For example, he can't spend money to go ahead and console mourners. Like, let's say, again, he can't go ahead and sponsor the Sudas Havra, which is the meal of consolation, the meal that the Avelim eat when they come back from the cemetery. Because something that has no limit. What it means it has no limit is there are always Avelim. As opposed to tefillin, right? How many pairs of tefillin does a person need? Okay, if you're a chassid, you need Rashi and Avelim Tam. But if you're not a chassid, right? So again, you need one pair of tefillin. In other words, it has a kitzvah. It has an amount. Right? Luvan Esrik has an amount. Mezuzos have a defined amount. So if it has a defined amount, you can spend the money of the estate. Doesn't have a defined amount, you can't spend the money of the estate. And apotropos can't go to court, right? Can't go to Bezdin, or can't litigate, ultimately, again, with the estate of the, with the property of the Yisomim, whether to be successful or to lose. So the Gemara says, Lazakos, I don't understand. If he can be successful and grow the estate, why can he not litigate? I will say, this is fascinating. So the Gemara says, Elalachov amanas liskos b'nechseizun. Rather, what it means is, he can't go to court if there's a possibility of losing. I will say, Rashi points out over here a fascinating halacha. If an apotropos goes to court to litigate something regarding the matter of the estate, if he goes ahead and he wins, the verdict stands. If he loses, the verdict is voided. Which is fascinating. So in other words, there is no such thing as a negative judgment passed on the estate of Yisomim. So I will say, as such, it doesn't make sense for the apotropos to go to court, because I will say it's a lopsided verdict. And I will say, it's not because necessarily it means that the Yisomim are always right. It's because, remember again, the way the system is set up is we want to maintain the estate for the Yisomim until they become older. Fine. Let's say again, the apotropos has an opportunity to go ahead and sell a field, an asset that is far away, and go ahead and redeem it for an asset that is closer. He can't do that. Right? Similarly, again, he can't swap a bad field for a good field. So the Gemara says, my time, the Dilma Mishtatfin. Because Rabbi said, maybe the good field that he acquires, ultimately, again, Mishtatfin, Rabbi said, literally means is going to get wind damage. In other words, what we say to the apotropos is, leave it alone. Right? Just leave everything alone. Your job is to maintain a holding pattern. Rabbi said, this is very interesting, because sometimes when we think about an apotropos, we think about someone whose job is not just to maintain, but to grow. So you see from here again, from the halacha is clear, no. His job is maintain. And by the way, maintain, even if some interesting opportunities come along that may be objectively beneficial for the Yisomim, we still tell the apotropos, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Vein apotropin, Roshan, by the way, you'll ask yourself, what's the pshat with this? Right, let's say there is an opportunity here. There are some opportunities that are objectively beneficial, right? There are obviously everything has risk, but there are so you have to listen also like on a deeper level. What we tell the apotropin is listen. Your job, maintain. We'll say, who takes care of Yisomim? Who takes care of Yisomim? The Ribono Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu says that Dafka for the widow and for the Yasum, for the widow and for the orphan, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I have a special place in my heart for them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially says to the apotropos, halacha says to the apotropos, just hold, right? Just hold. What's the, what are doctors, what's the oath, doctors, no harm? Do no harm, right? Right? So do no harm. That's essentially the apotropos. Do no harm. Do no harm. We don't even want you to help. Just do no harm. Why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got this. Paul says, Kavayt, Vein apotropin, Roshay, Limkar, Sodos, Velikach, Avadin. Similarly, again, apotropos can't sell fields and purchase slaves. Avam, Mochin, Avadin, Velochim, Ba'in, Sodos. So what's interesting? Apparently, he can sell slaves to buy fields. They both say, something like that is of objective benefit. Why? Slaves are people. People die. Right? Field, real estate endures. Shmuel Omer, af lo limkor avadim b'likach stados. No, it's not true. Shmuel says, no, stop. Don't do anything. Don't do anything. Don't even sell avadim to go out and buy fields. Why my taima? Shafion. Because we'll say maybe the field's not going to work out. The idea is everything has risk. Therefore, we are totally risk averse when it comes to the portfolio of the yisomim, and therefore just go into a holding pattern. The in apotrop and the hoti avadim lecherus. Interesting, an apotropis can't free avadim. Avamochrin osan laachirim vaachirim motzin osan lecherus. But the apotropin can sell the avadim to other people, and other people could go ahead and free the avadim. Rabbi Omer ani afu no sein de me asmo biyotze bepnei shukum ochralo. So ultimately, again, I will say saloch lemei. So the eved can even buy himself out. Fine. In words of tzarach lechashiv iman ba'achrona. So we'll say at the end of the day, so halach lemei, so when the Yisomim go ahead and grow up, they have to settle up with the apotropis. Rashi says over here, kishi yigdil yechashiv imayin, v'yishavash lo nishav yadoklum. So whatever the apotropis does, every transaction he engages in is under the microscope, and when the Yisomim grow up, ultimately, again, they have a right to impose a shvua, as the Mishnah said, they have a right to impose a shvua upon him that he acted justly and correctly with the estate. Rashi Nul Yolomer, einot tzarech. Shmuel says, "Ein otzarach, ein osin apotropin, ein otzarach." So Shmuel says, "Halacha lemaisa, you do not need this shvua." Again, we'll talk about this. Ein osin apotropin nashim va'avodim uktanim. An apotropis can't be women, servants, and ketanim. The minon avi yisum harshus biyado. Shabbos say that's just generally talking about a court appointed apotropis. So Rashi points out over here, you wouldn't appoint women, servants, or ketanim as apotropin. So again, let's work backwards. Ketanim and avadim. So an eved, Rashi says, doesn't have nemanos, doesn't have credibility. A katan doesn't have das. An isha, why not? Why can't you appoint women as an apotropis? So Rashi says, in darkon lotzeis v'lobo v'litruach. Just about to say, it's reflective of a societal norm, which is women weren't generally involved in commerce. See, I will say the apotropis does have to have business sense. Because one of the things we'll discuss is, as much as the apotropis can't go ahead and start selling him, but if he does see a potential loss to the estate, he may be obligated to take certain steps in order to go ahead and stave off that loss. Similarly, we see that he does have the right to sell off certain properties for the sustenance of the Yisroelim. So you have to know what you're doing in a business perspective. So the Gemara Rashi suggests that this was just reflective of a societal norm, that often women just were not engaged in business. So because they weren't engaged in business, so the woman may not be the right person to run the estate. However, the Gemara says, v'minon av yisom harshus biyado. We'll say, now, interestingly enough, this is all with a court-appointed apotropis. If the father himself decided to appoint one of these people, let's say the father has a sister, and he decided to appoint her as the apotropis, fine. So again, if she's in, if he appoints her, that's it. Someone goes out there. We'll say, great story. Who apotropis? The Havi Bishavusi Rabbi Meir. We'll say, there was once an apotropis in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir. The Havi come Zabin Arasa, the Zabin Avdi. We'll say, what was he doing? He was selling land and buying Avadim. Now we'll say, no one says you could do that, right? At most, the other opinion said that, one opinion said that what? You could sell Avadim who die, because they're people, and buy land. But no one says you could sell land and buy Avadim. And we'll say, what happened? V'lo Shafke, right? V'lo Shafke, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir shut him down. So you can't do that. So listen to this. Ach v'li b'chame. So he had a dream. Ani laharos v'ata livnos. In the dream, a baskal, right, said to him, I'm trying to destroy and you're trying to rebuild. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you have to understand, Rashi points out over here, this father, right, Zichrono Livracha, went ahead and built his empire, you know, through, he had ill-gotten means, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I am looking to go ahead and divest the estate. That's why I'm making the apotropis do the wrong thing, and you, Rabbi Meir, are interfering in my plans. So I will say, so what happens? Rabbi Meir gets up, and what does he say? Afilu haki lo ashkach. Right, Rabbi Meir didn't pay any attention. Why not? Amar, divrei chalomos lo ma'alin v'lo moridin. You will say, wow, what a statement. Dreams, they're not beneficial, and they're not detrimental. Right, so I will say, this is incredible. Rabbi Meir says, okay, dreams are dreams. Baskals are baskals. At the end of the day in life, do the right thing. So this apotropis is doing the wrong thing. I have an obligation to step in. I, Rabbi Meir, you're staring. the divine plan, right? Literally, your underlying primary says, that's not my problem. I do my thing, God does his thing. I can't worry about the plans of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, I just need to focus on living in this world. Right now, the apotropos is doing something wrong. It's my obligation to step in. I'm always saying that line of Divrei Chalomos, Lo Ma'alin V'lo Moridin. What a profound statement. I will say, what is the power of dreams? Right? What is the power of having dreams in life? So dreams are nice, right? Dreams ultimately, again, are good because they give you a vision of what you could do, what you could be, what you could build. But what's the problem? I was saying, too many times in life, we remain in the dream state of life. Dream state of life. And Rabbi Meir says, Divrei Chalomos, Lo Ma'alin V'lo Moridin. Dreams are nice, but just understand, dreams are neither beneficial nor are they detrimental. Now, I will say, what's the effect of having something that's not beneficial or detrimental? What's the effect of that? Right? Where does it leave you in life? Where does it leave you? Standing in place. See, I will say, dreaming a little bit is very good because it could inspire you to engage in dynamic activity. Dreaming too much could paralyze you and cause you to remain in place because you're so fixated with the dream. You're so fixated with the goal. You're so fixated with the vision and you're thinking about it and dreaming about it. Only one problem is you're not executing. That's what it means. Divrei Chalomos, Lo Ma'alin V'lo Moridin. Dreams are good. Dreams are good. But perpetual dreaming, right? It's true. You're not committing out there. I'm not backsliding, right? In Moridin, V'lein Ma'alin. But you're also not advancing in life. Life is this very careful balance, this very careful combination. A little bit of dreaming is fantastic as long as it's accompanied by a whole lot of action. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara tells another story, great story. This is a great story. This is a great story. And I'll say, look when we're learning it. Hano Beitre, De Igri Be Satan, De Chol Be Shimshi. There were these two people who were always arguing. Always arguing. And I will say, every towards sunset. And I will say, towards sunset of when? Listen to this, Rashi says, Shall Erev Shabbos. I will say, you might be too tired to remember what day it is today, right? It's Erev Shabbos Kodesh. So listen to this story. There were two people. There are two people who were always arguing on Erev Shabbos. And what happens, I will say? What happens, the Gemara says, Have a come and see about how the Adadi. Ikli Rabbi Meir Lahasam. Rabbi Meir went over to the house, went over to them. Rabbi will say, by the way, the Rishonim comment on, why does it say, who are the two people? Who are the two people? Ah, so I'll say, the Marashah brings out, it was a husband and wife. Husband and wife, Erev Shabbos. I will say, there is no time to go at it, like Erev Shabbos, right? Erev Shabbos, right? For some reason, tension. I knew Shabbos has been coming for 6 days, right? It's not like it's, oh, Shabbos, right? Not like it's a surprise, right? And it's not like, by the way, that the timing creeps up on us, right? In other words, you could see what time Shabbos is going to be 17 years in advance. Right? Where did this come from? 8:21, right? What was 7:21, right? 8:21, where did this come from? Yeah, it was that yet amazingly enough. Why is it a dynamic in so many homes? Comes Erev Shabbos, right? It's not the sounds of harmony and the sounds of love that are wafting through the home, right? But it's often accusations, condemnations, finger pointing, why you this, that, why? So the good news is, it's not new, right? The good news is Rabbi Meir was dealing with this as well. So what happened? Rabbi Meir went over there. Akvinu tlasa v'shimshi. So I'll say, literally translated, it means he stayed there for three sunsets, ad da'avad luhu shalma, until he made peace between these two individuals. Shame, dika amri, so I'll say, so whatever it means, three sunsets, it means he stayed there for some prolonged amount of time in order to make shalom. Shame, dika amri, I'll say, he heard the satan saying, Vai da'afkire mer lahu gavrami beise. Woe to me, this is the satan speaking, woe to me that ultimately, again, Rabbi Meir has removed me from this home. Incredible story, I will say. So first, I'll just point out an incredible idea. I saw brought down a story. Well, first of all, the idea over here is, why is it that fighting happens, in all seriousness, why is it that often there's tension on Erev Shabbos? So you could say, again, because there's a rush. And I would say, it's not true, by the way. It can't be about the rush. Because really, at the end of the day, you know when Shabbos is happening, right? So you could say, maybe we're ill-prepared. Okay, but still, I would say, we're not incompetent people, right? In other words, like, we're not incompetent people. So, and this happens every single week. So why is it that there is a tension that surrounds Erev Shabbos? So the answer happens to be very simple. The answer is, wherever there is the greatest Kiddusha, there is also the greatest opposing force. Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook, Sefer Sadeh Kadosh Baruch Hu, brings this down by Rivka Imenu, when she is pregnant with twins. The pasuk says, "Vayisrotetzu abanim bekirba." The children struggled in utero, right? Yaakov and Esav. And Rav Cook says that wherever there is Kiddusha, there is always an opposite and opposing force of Tumah. Wherever there is a Yaakov, by definition, there is an Esav. Rav will say, Shabbos is me'ein olam haba. Shabbos is a little taste of the world to come. Shabbos is a little taste of living tachas kante yashchina. So as that day, the holiness of that day approaches, the opposing forces become even stronger. And they push back. And the home, which is to be the epicenter of Kiddusha on that day, which is Me'ein Olam Haba, that home becomes ground zero. That home becomes the womb between Yaakov and Esav. That home now becomes the battleground between Kiddusha and Tumah. And often Tumah, in this context, takes the form of kas, of anger. Because for whatever the reason, there is no day where kas is more regularly found in the home than Erev Shabbos. But I will say, it's not because we're last minute people. It's not, that may amplify it. But Lamai said, at the end of the day, it's because there's so much Kiddusha that's about to come. And wherever there is Kiddusha, ultimately there is always an opposing Tumah. And I will say, that being said, plan ahead. Plan ahead. The truth is, a person shouldn't be engaged in Shabbos preparations within the hour before Shabbos. They shouldn't, unless, of course, there's extenuating circumstances. By an hour before Shabbos, especially summer Shabbosos, you should be done. You should be done. And if you're not done, again, if it's an extenuating circumstance, okay. But the last Shabbos said, the day is long enough and we are capable enough people to structure our lives in such a way that we do not have to go into Shabbos harried. We don't have to go into Shabbos into a flurry of activity. The day that is Me'ein Olam Haba requires proper hachana. And we know this. We know this from our own lives. When you do proper hachana, you bring down the tension level in the home significantly. But I will say, at the end of the day, that's I'll tell you an incredible ma'isa. There's a story that's told that a couple once came to the Belz Rebbe. And the couple said that they were having incredible difficulty in Shalom Bayis. So they asked the Rebbe for an Eitzah. What should we do? So I said, get ready. This is wild. The Rebbe says, you should learn this Gemara in Maseches Gittin every day together. Rebbe says, this is the skula for Shalom Bayis. Couple should learn this Gemara together, and that's the skula for Shalom Bayis. Rebbe was saying, because so often, why is it that people encounter problems in their marriage unlike any other relationship? Why is that? We'll say it's the same idea as Erev Shabbos. Because Lamai said, why is there so much tension in Erev Shabbos? Because there's so much Kiddusha that is building up. And the more Kiddusha, the more the opposing force. We'll say, why is it that marriage is often the relationship that is fraught with more problems than any other relationship? Because we'll say, it is the relationship which potentially contains the most Kiddusha. Wherever you have the power for the greatest amount of Kiddusha is also where there is going to be the greatest pushback for Tumah. An ability to build a relationship with a spouse, Rabbi Osei, is the relationship which houses the greatest potential for Kiddusha, and therefore, it faces the greatest amount of stress, the greatest amount of pushback. So says the Belz Rebbe, you want the school of Shalom Bayis? Gittin Nun Beis Amud Aleph. Learn the Erev Shabbos Gemara every day. The Rebbe says, school of Shalom Bayis. I don't know the end of the story, by the way. I don't know, right? But again, if the Rebbe says it, it's going to work. We'll say incredible. I'll also mention that what you begin to see from this story of Rabbi Meir is how Rabbi Meir ultimately is getting involved in all of these things. Also, you know, sometimes you see someone's having discord and you say to yourself, not my problem. Rabbi Meir was one of those guys, one of those people, who when he saw a problem, he made it his problem. maybe this problem in an effort to fix it. And Karabo said, let's go weiter. Oh my gosh, so much to do. Let's go weiter. Says the Gemara, Halo Apotropos, David Bishavuzi, Rabbi Yishob Levi. There was an Apotropos in the neighborhood of Rabbi Yishob Levi. David Kamizabin, Arav, Zabin Turei. So ultimately, again, he was selling land and buying oxen. Velo Amrlei velo Midi, and ultimately again, Rabbi Shimon Levi didn't say anything to him. So the Rabbi Yosi, he held Rabbi Yosi. The Amar, the Rabbi Yosi, listen to this. So we'll say, so this seems to be wrong. This seems to be wrong, right? So he's selling oxen, and right, I'm sorry, he's selling land and he's buying oxen. Rabbi Yosi, it seems to be wrong. So how can you do this? So we'll say, says the Amar, but Rabbi Shimon Levi didn't say anything. So the Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Shimon Levi held the Rabbi Yosi. What did Rabbi Yosi say? The Rabbi Yosi, said Rabbi Yosi, mi yomai lo karisi ishti ishti ula shori shori. I never called my wife my wife. And my ox. Eloli ishti besi, I called my wife my home, right? Ulushori shori, ulushori sadi. And my ox, my field. So I will say the point over here is that an ox is often referred to as a field. So if apparently Rabbi Shimon Levi didn't say anything because it was essentially selling one field for another field. I will say this idea also of calling one's wife one's home. So I will say also such a profound yisod in terms of the essence of marriage. Let's say, you know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh brings down, we know that we have a minhag in Klal Yisrael. Not everybody has it, but there is a minhag that the Kala walks around the Chassan 7 times, right? So we'll say, so the question is always asked, right? Well, Kala's walking, why doesn't the Chassan walk around 7 times, right? Or let them do 3.5 and 3.5, whatever. Although that would be a nightmare to keep. Already as it is, for some reason, why it's so complicated to keep count of 7 under a chuppah is not okay. Like, we're Klal Yisrael, like we survive everything, yet for some reason count. All right, but anyway, different story. So why is it that the Kala does it? So I'm going to say, so remember again, Vashon HaKadosh says very simply, the number 7, of course, represents creation of the world, right? What is the Kala doing when she walks around to her chassan 7 times? She says, I recognize that I have the primary responsibility for creating the identity of the home. Well, you know, we like to talk about shared partner, right? Partnership, and this, and everybody. It's true. It's true. It was at the end of the day, it is the wife, it is the mother, who creates the core identity of the home. The husband, the father, has to participate in many other ways, but the ikar identity, I will say, is created by the mother. That's what Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the wife. That's what Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, that ultimately, again, she's the one who walks around 7 times. She's the dynamic, active one. The chassan is sitting there. Chassan is sitting there. It's also metaphorical, you know, right? You know, like, the chassan is there, right? Everything is happening around him, and she's taking the ownership over creating the core identity. That's the idea. And Rabbi Yossi says that I never called my wife my wife. I called my wife my home. She's not simply a spouse. She's everything. She is the one who creates the identity of the home. Gemara goes weiter. Oh no, Yasmi. Davismichi, Gabi who's Safta. We'll say there were these Yisomim, and they were relying on this Safta. We'll say, who's Safta? Right? An older woman. Now, she was not a formal apotropos. She was just someone who helped the Yisomim out. Havalu Tursa. So they had a cow. Shaklov is Avintanele. So ultimately, she sold the cow. She sold the cow. So Asu Krovim Lekamei Rav Nachman. So the relatives of these kids, of these Yisomim, came to Rav Nachman. Amrle my avidite de zabna. Why did she go ahead and sell it? Amrle who yisomim shesam cho itza balabayis tinan. Right. Ultimately, again, it says that halacha lemaisa yisomim who relied on balabayis v'ha'yaker b'shusa deloke v'ha'yaker. But the cow, price of the cow went up. The value of the cow. So they were upset. They were upset that she sold the cow, and meanwhile, the cow appreciated. The cow appreciated. To which the Gemara says, I will say, by the way, also such a profound story. Isn't it interesting that you have these Yisomim who are relying on this Safta, right? Who's Safta? Just some nice elderly woman. And I will say, interestingly enough, so if you don't read the story, you think to yourself, well, they must have no relatives. But yet, what happens? Then, once Safta sells the cow, so suddenly what happens? All the relatives show up. All the relatives show up. So it's just an interesting dynamic in life, how sometimes, you know, when something needs to get done, sometimes people are nowhere to be found. But when they perceive that something goes wrong, then suddenly again everyone is front and center. Interesting dynamic. The Gemara goes weiter. So what happened? So they were upset because the cow appreciated. So the Gemara says, well, b'shus edil keach yaker. Well, it's true it appreciated, but appreciated while it was owned by the purchaser. V'halone kite dami. But 1 second, but the Yisom didn't get paid yet. Amar lehu imkein hainu d'rav chani lo'i bar idi. D'rav shlo bar rav chani lo'i bar idi. Amar Shmuel. Nichse Yisomim hari hein kehekdish v'lo mikni ela b'kasba. I will say, this is fascinating. The property of the Yisomim is no different than Hekdish. I will say, the way it works with Hekdish is, a transaction with Hekdish is only finalized once money is given. once money is given. But say in general, when you acquire metaltalin, metaltalin are acquired through meshicha, through taking physical possession. But yet, by hekdish, right, a property transfer, or I should say, not a property, item transfer, a transaction is only finished when money changes hands. Shabbi Chani Loi says, yisumim are like hekdish, and therefore the transaction is only completed with money. So that what that means is, in this case, if the yisumim didn't yet get paid, and the cow appreciated, they could take the cow back, because the cow is still in their possession. Chamrei, so the Gemara says, Elo b'kasa, Chamrei d'Rabna Ukva Yasma, so we'll say, Rabna Ukva, the Yasum, had wine. Mashchua ba'arba arba, so ultimately again they sold it, right, it was sold on his behalf, for 4 zuz, a barrel. V'yakar, and ultimately again then it became more expensive. V'kam b'shisa, and ultimately now it's worth 6 zuz, a barrel. Asak nidrab Nachman, they came before Rab Nachman. Amr lohu, tachinu d'Rabbi Chani Lai bar Idi, okay? D'Rabbi Chani Lai bar Idi, Amr Shmuel, nichsi yisom harahin kekdish, v'lo mikni ela b'kaspa. So once we have this concept, that ultimately the property of yisom is treated like the property of hekdish, and just like the property of hekdish, ultimately the transaction is not finalized until money it changes hands. Same thing applies to the yisom. So what this does is, it gives the yisom maximum flexibility that if the item appreciates before the purchaser takes possession, they could, so to speak, back out of the transaction and benefit from the appreciated value. Now I'll say, now watch this. Mashach peri miyasmi yakar. So we'll say, if the yisomim, let's say the estate, the apotropos was selling property, he was selling peros, and the peros appreciated. But money didn't exchange hands. Ultimately, again, we'll say, because this way, halacha lemaisa, yisomim could back out. Zol, we'll say, watch this. What happens if the yisomim sold peros, right? The purchaser took possession of the peros, didn't pay money, and now the produce depreciated. Depreciated. So we'll say, in this case, remember again, the yisomim, what's in their best interest? What's in their best interest? To lock down the transaction and not to be able, not to have the purchaser avoid it. Lo yehei koach hadyot chor mehekdish. So we'll say, ultimately again, so in this case, we'll say, essentially what we say is like this. The yisomim get the best of both worlds. When it's beneficial for their transactions to be treated like hekdish transactions, we do that. And when it's beneficial for their transactions to be treated like regular transactions, we do that. So if the property appreciates before money has changed hands, we treat it like hekdish, and the yisomim could back out of the transaction, keep the asset, because now it's appreciated. When the item has depreciated, then we say, oh, once you've taken possession, even if money has not changed hands, sorry, transaction is done, you can't go back on it, like a regular transaction. Incredible. Amshichu lu per liyasmi. So we'll say, what happens if the reverse? The yisom took possession of peros. Iyaker, so ultimately if they go up, lo yei koach hadyot chor mehekdish. The transaction of a regular person shouldn't be any more stringent than hekdish. No, as Rabbi say, if they took possession and it went up, transaction is sealed. Zol, if it depreciated. Sarv minedur hainud rab chani lai bar idi. Dasar chani lai bar idi. Ultimately, again, that Allah said transaction is not finalized until money changes hands. But that doesn't always work out well for the Yisomim. Because sometimes the Yisomim will need produce. And no one's going to give it to them until they furnish funds. Yoivi Yasmi Zuze Aperi, if the Yisomim went in and paid for produce, Zol, if it went down in price, Lo Yikoach Hedyot, Chamer Mikoach Hekdish. A regular transaction should be no more Chamer than Hekdish, therefore the Yisomim should be able to back out because they didn't get to Mashicha. Iyakar, if it became more expensive, Saramine Hainu Drav Chani Lai Bar Idi. So Amr Lahu Rav Shisha, Bre Drav Idi, that's not necessarily good for them. Why? Harohu Lidido, it could be objectively detrimental. Why? Amr Beis. Ultimately, I will say, because people could claim, well, you acquired it with your money, it was already yours, and by the way, there was a fire in the storehouse and you lost your produce. If ultimately, again, if the money was given to the Yisomim for peros, if the produce went up in value, then ultimately, again, it wasn't Mashicha, so therefore they should be able to back out. So Zol, if it went down in value, Savra Mine Hainud Rav Chani Lai Bar Idi. Armadahu Rav Shisha Bar Idrav Idi Vaharohu Lidido. It's not necessarily good for them. Why? Sometimes they're going to need money. No one's going to give them the money until they go out and they give the produce. So I just want to point out what's happening over here. What's happening over here is as far as we'll say that Halacha Lamais, essentially what we're saying is like this. We always want to give the Yisomim the benefit of every transaction. So since Shabbos, in Halacha, let me tell you this outside, there are two different types of transactions. There's a Hekdish transaction and a Hedyot transaction. Shabbos, in a Hekdish transaction, When is the transaction affected? When is it affected? Actually, let's work backwards. By a hegyo transaction, metaltalin, right? When is the transaction affected? When? Meshicha. Meshicha, not about money. In other words, even if you give money, the item has not been transferred. It's all about Meshicha. All about Meshicha. In hegyo, in hegdish, how is the transaction affected? Money. Maos, kesef. So essentially what the Gemara is saying is when it comes to Yisomim, so what type of transactional framework are they governed by? And the answer is both. Whichever one is more beneficial to them. So I'll say, and pretty much what that depends on is, has the asset appreciated or depreciated as the transaction is unfolding? So whichever transactional framework gives them greater benefit is the one we're going to go with. Now, all the Gemara sensitizes us to, I will say, is just understand that while you're trying to benefit the Yisomim, which is beautiful, Lemaisa, just understand people may also become more reluctant to do business with them, right? Because if you know that when you do business with the Yisomim, essentially you're going to get the short end of the stick, right? One way or the other, people may just be reluctant. So just understand, in your effort to benefit the Yisomim, you may also be putting them at a disadvantage because, again, everyone's going to be hesitant. But I will say, but that's the bottom line. We give them the transactional benefit. And I will say, let's finish up. Amar of Shisha. Sorry, I just skipped, right? Good. Amar Rashi. Anav Rav Kahana, Chasmina Ashtar, Di'imei Dezi'ira Yasma, De'bezam Na'ara. So let's listen to this. So Rav Ashi said, Nin Rav Kahana, we signed on a document of sale by the mother of Zi'ira the Yasim. Essentially, the mother was kind of acting as the apotropis. So this could be a case where the father appointed her, right, as the apotropis over the estate, and she was selling off land. Selling off land? What's he can't sell off land? She was selling off land, lekarga, to pay off the head tax, below achrasta, without announcing it. I was saying, in general, when you sell land, right, specifically, again, land of Yisomim, you're supposed to announce it for 30 days. Why? I will say, what's our goal? Drive up the price. We want to create a shtickle bidding war. So if you just do a fire sale, right, there's no time for anyone to hear about the land. So I will say, but yet she sold off a piece of real estate immediately to pay off the head tax. I mean, our day, lekarga, lemizoni, lekvura, mazmino, belalach rasta. We'll say, because Nardoim said, lekarga, to pay off your head tax, to pay taxes, to pay for food and to pay for burial, you could sell off land without prior announcement. Which I will say makes sense because these are things that are all considered to be immediate needs. So because they are immediate needs, you can go ahead and sell them. You could go ahead and sell them even without a prior announcement. Incredible. I will say that's Kavaita. Great story. Amram Tzaval, Apotropa di Yasmihavo. Amram the Dyer, right, was an apotropis for Yisomim. Asu Krov Mekamed Rav Nachman. It's supposed to listen to this. So the relatives of the Yisomim, came Rav Nachman. They were unhappy with Amram. They said, Amrile, Kalavishu Mechasim Yasmi. He is spending the estate's money on his own clothing. Right? The guy's getting custom suits. Right? Suddenly he's dressing all nicely. Amrilehu. So Rav Nachman said, you're right, he should. Kihechi delishtamin mile. I will say, because Amram wants people to take him seriously. I will say, this is an interesting yisod. How people, right? Again, I will say, whether we like to admit it or not, right? Lamaisa, we judge. We judge everyone. And I will say, how do we judge people? Right? How they dress. Right? We judge them how they dress. We judge them on the car they drive. We judge them on the house. That's it. Like, and it, especially when you're judging success, right? How do you know if a person is successful? The answer is you don't. But we like to rely on superficial, observable metrics, right? If you dress a certain way, live a certain material life, you must be successful. So Rav Nachman says to this, so it's interesting, Rav Nachman says to the relatives, it's good for Amram to look good. It's good for Amram to look successful. Why? Because it'll help him in going ahead and navigating the trend. In other words, people will take him seriously. But he's also eating, right? He's also eating well, and he's drinking fine wines, and what does that have to do with anything else? So I'll say, fine, the dress, the clothing I could hear, because that's klapei chutz. What about the other stuff? To which the Gemara says, there's a grab of lo amid, emor mitzia ashkach. Rav Nachman says, well, maybe he found an object. In other words, how do you know that money is coming from the Yisomim. Maybe at the end of the day he found a diamond or he found something else and he cashed it and he's using it to support this more lavish lifestyle. In other words, unless you have proof that he's paying it for from the estate of the Yisomim, ultimately, again, there's no claim to be made. Baha kam mafsid, to which the Gemara says, aye, but he's, look at Rashi. Vai kam mafsid. Rashi says, nixei som she'inu mefarni sakakos kiroi, levekot zetzilanos. He's not taking proper care of the estate. Amar luhu, I see sa'adi de mafsid vaskaline. Okay, bring me witnesses. In other words, you can't just make a claim. You have to support that claim in some way. If an apotropos causes a loss to the estate, you can remove him. The itmar, apotropos the mafsid. If you have an apotropos that causes a loss, Rav Huna amrav misalkinle, we remove him. The Beir Rabbi Shila amri lo misalkinle, we don't remove him. The Hilchasa misalkinle. Ultimately, I will say, Aloha Lamaisa, we will go ahead and actively remove him from his position. We'll say one more piece. Apotropos, we know, Abi Yisom Yishava. We'll say the Mishnah said that if an apotropos was appointed by the father of the Yisomim, he has to take an oath when he finishes. In other words, when he finishes his apotropos kait, my time, ilav de isle hano amine, lohavi le apotropos. Mishum Shavua, lo asim nu. I will say, we assume that when someone agrees, when the father asks someone to be an apotropos, and the guy agrees, we'll say, why is the guy agreeing to the apotropos, to be the apotropos? Why is he agreeing? Why is he agreeing? Because he must owe something to the father. Like the father did him some tov, because we'll say, being an apotropos is a big responsibility. So he must owe something to the father. That's why he's doing it. So because he owes something to the father, the fact that he knows that he's going to have to take a shvua is not going to prevent him from becoming the apotropos. And we'll say, contrast this with an apotropos appointed by Beis Din. Right, an apotropos appointed by Beis Din, we'll say, why is this guy doing it? Why is this guy doing it? As a favor to Beis Din. Well, if it's a favor, if you ask him to take a shua, then what? Then what? He's not going to do it. All right, well, so stop over here for today. Wow. What a way. What a way to go into Shabbos, we'll say. Such with an Erev Shabbos Gemara. Shkayach. All right, Chevron Zoom. Have a great day, everyone. Mel, I don't know. It looks like you're like in a SpaceX something, ready to take off over here. I don't know. Hatzlacha. Jerry, wonderful to see you on the rooftop. All right, shkayach, everyone. I'm sorry.